Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, the Reverend Dr. Death. Joining me, as always, my co-host, La Urena, and this is the follow-up to the 28 Days Later podcast. It's 28 Weeks Later from 2007. Tagline, it all begins again.
I don't know that I like that.
Yeah, it's definitely not as good as the one from 28 Days Later.
Very lackluster.
Directed by Juan Carlos Fresnadillo, I guess is how you say that.
Fresnadillo.
Quesadilla. Written by Rowan Joffe, Juan Carlos Fresnadillo, Enrique Lopez Levine, and Jesus Olmo.
A lot of Spanish people.
A lot of Spanish people.
Okay.
Music again, John Murphy, made for a budget of $15 million, so double the original. Only made $64 million this time, so instead of being made for $8 and making $87, it was $15 and $64. A little bit of a loss there.
Yeah, but not terrible. They did okay. They barely came out.
I feel like the zombie resurgence was a little bit on the decline by 2007. It still had legs, obviously. The Walking Dead came out.
But yeah.
2007, people were like, yeah, maybe we're getting a little bit sick of zombies again. And, you know, then The Walking Dead just drove them into the fucking ground.
So. Yeah. Well, maybe it was also they didn't see Cillian Murphy in it. And obviously that one had done so amazing. So maybe they were like, this is going to be dead in the water. I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't think Jeremy Renner was as big of a draw as he is now. Like, I mean, people didn't – clearly wasn't Hawkeye at that time. So, I mean, it was, you know, and he was just kind of like a second-run action guy. Maybe the Hurt Locker – I don't even know if the Hurt Locker came out by that time. That was like his big breakout role. I mean, that one – it came out in 2008. So, yeah, like, he wasn't even known for that yet. So, I mean – it did. I mean, and Rose Byrne, like she was known by horror fans for, you know, obviously Rosen's Insidious and all that, but she hadn't really broke out like majorly. And I don't know if she still has, to be honest. I mean, outside of certain circles.
Yeah.
So it didn't have a huge draw even with that. Principal players, we have Imogene Poots. I feel so sorry that she has that name. It's just terrible.
She probably
playing
loves
Tammy,
it.
Probably, I guess. She plays Tammy, the teenage sister to Andy in Survivor, daughter of Dawn and Alice. Gorgeous, gorgeous girl, though. She's got screen presence for days. I mean, not only this movie, but when I remember that she was the hot girl that Anton Yelton is attracted to in Fright Night remake from 2011, I was like, oh, yeah. She's smoking hot in that movie, like big time.
Yeah.
She was.
Oh my God! Stop! Really important. Real important information just popped up. Her middle name is Gay.
Imogene Gay Poots. Oh my God.
It gets worse. God. Okay, I'm sorry I had to interrupt this broadcast, but that's fucking hilarious. I was just trying to find out a little bit more information about her. I didn't want to find out her middle name was Gay.
Going back to our Lord and Savior Nick Cage, he has one of my favorite old SNL sketches where he keeps talking about, they keep rattling off like whoever is female co-star is in that scene, keeps rattling off names for their kid that they're going to have, and he keeps shooting it down. Like, he comes up with names that the kids at the school would use to make fun of it. You know, speaking of Imogene Poots.
Yeah.
And through the whole thing, and you're like, why is he, like, so tore up about this? And when it gets to the end of the thing, there's a doorbell ring, and so he goes to the door of the apartment, and the guy who's delivering it says, I've got a delivery for Asswipe Johnson. Asswipe Johnson. And then Nick Cage says, that's Asweepe. So that's the whole reason why he's like, you know, because obviously with a name like Asswipe, you're going to get made fun of.
Oh, my God. I'm a Jean Gay Poots. And I'm sorry. It doesn't get any better because who the fuck in Britain or the UK is naming their daughter Tammy?
That's probably true.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
She was in V for Vendetta. She played, I think, like the younger version, maybe, or like a friend in that movie to Natalie Portman's character when they were like at a certain point.
Okay.
She was in Need for Speed. She was in Popstar, Never Stop Popping. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie with Andy Samberg, but it's actually pretty hilarious.
No, I've heard like good things.
It's pretty funny. Fright Night. Great. That's the thing. You're always talking about good remakes or great remakes of horror films. Fright Night is a fucking amazing remake. I love the original movie, but that remake is pretty fucking good. Vivarium, which we've talked about on the podcast, which is as real life horror as you can get. Her and Jesse Eisenberg find this rant or get sent to this rant. There is a couple. They get sent to this random suburban neighborhood in no name anywhere. Their house looks like every other house on the street. They end up being handed this child who won't stop screaming. Jesse Eisenberg goes out every day trying, because they can't escape this place. They're trapped in it. He goes every day trying to dig a hole to try to get out of there, and then ends up spending all of his life working to dig the hole only to be killed in it.
Yes.
Which is, you know, the guy going out to work. She stays home with the kid, gets no thanks for it. The kid screams at her. At the end of the day, the kid doesn't appreciate the fact that she raised it. And whenever it becomes a man in like the course of a week, it turns around and then kills her and thanks her for, you know, sacrificing her life so that it could live. And when you get to the end of the movie, you realize it's a commentary on just like life. You're just like, this is the most horrifying movie I've ever seen, but for the wrong reason, or maybe the right reasons.
Birth control. No, just kidding.
Yeah. Green Room. That's a really good movie where this punk rock band plays this one gig, and turns out that Patrick Stewart, of all people, Professor X, is a neo-Nazi, and they start killing, and the band members have to try to survive these neo-Nazis trying to kill them.
Okay.
Unfortunately, she has marred all of her goodwill because she was in the Black Christmas remake, and not the 2016 one or whenever that one came out, the one that, you know, had Lacey Chabert and some of the other ones in there. No, she was in the one that was in 2019. That is the most woke garbage I have ever sat down and watched, period. And it is disgusting how woke it is. Terrible movie. Every guy in that movie, even the gay guy who is their quote-unquote friend, ends up becoming a misogynistic graper at some point in the movie. Just saying.
All about that grape. That's where these all horror movies. All about that grape. Yep.
Macintosh Muggleton, and that is his fucking name, Macintosh, which is even worse than Imogene Poots.
Is it really, though? Because he's got Muggle in it, and it's very Harry Potter-ish.
It is, but, I mean, that name sounds like it's made up, and it might be. Might be made up. Macintosh Muggleton plays Andy, Tammy's little brother, carrier of the rage virus, and he has heterochromia, which is where you have one eye of a different color than the other, which is really freaky, but it happens.
Okay, wait, he has it. She doesn't. I thought she did.
No, the daughter doesn't. He does. Okay,
got it.
He has nothing else to his name. Apparently, he was in this movie and then fucked off, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, actually, I take that back. He's been in some things, but they're like, you know, very British and like I've never heard of them. Funny thing about him, I'm just going to say it. He is the weakest point in this movie. Mm-hmm. I know he's a kid, but his acting is pretty bad.
Yeah.
It just is. Jeremy Renner. I don't know who that is. Plays Doyle.
Never heard of him.
Well, the U.S. military sniper.
Jeremy Renner?
Hawkeye? I'm joking. Noah.
Oh.
We always do that whenever it's somebody big name in the movie.
Yeah.
Obviously, he plays Hawkeye. The Hurt Locker.
I've not seen The Hurt Locker.
Movie. That's a hell of a good movie.
It really is. It's, and that actor or that director who made that, Amy, whatever it is, she made a name for herself. That's a pretty good movie. Tag, which is, I know it's right before comedy died, but it's not the best of movies. I know a lot of people gave it credit, but I mean, I think that's only because comedy movies were so dead by the time that Tag came out that it was just like, at least we tried to make something that was funny in the woke society. The House, I didn't really like that either. That's one of Will Ferrell's worst movies. Like him and was it Amy Poehler, I think, have like their kids trying to go to college, and so they start running like this illegal like gambling operation in their house to raise money for college.
Yep.
It's not that good.
Okay.
It's not that good. Arrival, Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters. That's not too bad. It's kind of a fun movie.
Yeah, it was a good one.
The Bourne Legacy, which means that Jeremy Renner is the also ran Bourne person.
Okay.
To Matt Damon. And the assassination of Jesse James by that coward Howard or coward Robert Ford. I bring that up because you know who was the star of that movie? Brad Pitt.
Who might shit.
Also be in another movie that we're covering. Mm-hmm. So kind of funny that they were in a movie together.
That's funny. That's a long ass movie title.
It's terrible. It's actually a good movie. I mean, it's pretty, it stays true to the, truth is relative when it comes to all that Jesse James, but as much as people know about him, that it was pretty much a truthful story. Rose Byrne plays Scarlett, the U.S. military virologist. Yeah, she's not been in anything. She was in a movie called Knowing with our Lord and Savior, Nick Cage. she was in Sunshine with Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
Troy with one Brad Pitt. Get Him to the Greek, Bridesmaids, Neighbors 1 and 2, Spirited, The Turning, the 2013 one, which was awful that we covered. I'm actually getting rid of that Blu-ray. After we covered that movie, I'm like, yeah, this movie's hot garbage. I'm not watching that again. And even if it has Wolf Pack, whatever his name is, from Finn Wolfhard or whatever his name is. Yeah. And then Insidious. She's in all of the Insidious movies except Part 3. That's the only one she's not in. But that's technically a prequel, so it makes sense she's not in that one.
It's hard for me to choose because she does comedy so well, but between Bridesmaids as the bitchy bridesmaid, you know, friend, and Get Into the Greek as the singer Jackie Q, which a lot of her songs are on my playlist.
I think she is the best thing about Neighbors. It is not Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen fucking sucks. I mean, anybody out there likes him, fine. But if you've seen one movie of his, you've seen every movie.
Yes,
of his,
that's true.
He does not fucking change at all.
He's the Will Smith of white, boring white men.
Yeah, well, he's even worse than that because at least Will Smith, even though he's been cucked by, you know, or Will Pinkett, you know, has been cucked by his wife, he's at least semi-interesting in his own. All that Seth Rogen has made a name for himself in recent years is really bad Twitter takes that are woke as fuck and smoking pot like it's about to go extinct. That's all he's known for. I mean, really, that's it.
Yeah.
We have Harold Perrineau playing Flynn, the U.S. military helicopter pilot. And I didn't realize who this guy was until I started looking at his stuff. He is the main character in the show From.
Hell
and
yeah, he is.
I swear, you need to watch that show.
That show is awesome. It's a hell of a good show.
Noah, to Noah's credit, he tries to get me to watch it all the time. And it's not that I'm not interested in it. Like, I watch it and I'll be
it
like...
It is actually scary. It's legit. Yeah.
I'll be like, what's going on? And he'll be like, you got to watch it. And I'm like...
It's almost impossible to explain that show. It's like trying to explain Lost to somebody.
Is it like trying to explain women?
Yes.
It kind of, yeah. It's funny because I feel like It and Lost have similar vibes because it's like they're in purgatory.
Yeah.
They've not come out and said that, but that's what it's like.
Well, yeah, that's what it seems like.
I watched majority of the first season with Noah, and I think I got it up till the teenager made it up to the main house, or the teenager house, I should say. Maybe a little bit past that. And I'm like, they're in some kind of weird-ass purgatory. Where are we going with this? And it's like, I've never not been interested when it's been on. It's always captured my attention. Why I can't watch it, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm too scared to.
I think they're working on season 3 right now.
I really am looking forward to that because there's so many questions that need answered after that second season. I mean, they don't need to answer everything because you want the show to stay mysterious for it, you know, to work, but they got to answer something. I feel like they've added so much on now that they've got to start explaining some stuff.
Okay, Harold Perrineau. I know him. I've seen him in so much.
Yeah, he's been in Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions. He was in Lost. Funny that he's also in From.
Yeah.
They're very similar. Sabotage, 30 Days of Night, Dark Days. He was in one episode of Z Nation. Another zombie movie.
Interesting.
Did you ever watch that show all the way to the end?
I tried watching that show. Now, Black Christmas or whatever, or Black Summer that was a spinoff from Z Nation, that's a fucking good show.
Black Summer's a spinoff of Z Nation?
It is. It actually is. And it's completely, totally different because Black Summer is
serious,
very dark and very serious.
I didn't know that 30 Days of Night had another movie.
I know people like 30 Days of Night. That movie does not. I mean, it's okay. Don't get me wrong. There's way worse vampire movies. But vampire movies, first of all, kind of bore me. And, like, I don't get 30 Days of Night's appeal. It's like if you take a good zombie movie and then you kind of, like, amp up, like, the zombie's abilities. That's what you get in 30 Days of Night. That's what it is. I mean,
well, they definitely have a advantage. But that's only because of location.
I didn't understand. You know what I didn't understand about that movie is the whole idea the vampires are going to have a frenzy of food to eat, and then it's going to begin their ass kicked by regular people. And it's not even a lot of people; it's a little bit. That was like the hardest part I had about that movie. It's like, somebody get this right. You guys planned this thing out so you can go in a feeding frenzy, and then you just end up getting your ass kicked when you have super abilities.
Oh, and they don't just get their ass kicked. They get their ass kicked by Josh Hartnett. And that's the ultimate, low blow when you get your ass kicked by him. So,
yeah, that's what made that movie bad. It was the fact that, like, you're talking about people that have lived for hundreds of years and you guys planned this thing out and you couldn't execute it.
You got to understand, he already survived the faculty. So,
I'm just saying.
Of course, he had the skills of what it was going to take for 30 Days a Night.
And he survived H2O, and he survived having the worst haircut of any person in the 90s, period.
Mm-hmm. He did. I
mean, go back and watch those movies. It is fucking up. It's a bowl cut that swoops out at the sides. Like, I don't know who thought that was a good idea, but it looks stupid.
He had that, what is it, Harry haircut from Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah, it looks like Lloyd Christmas's haircut. Yes. Except for the fact it's got wings off to the side, which makes it worse.
They called him Josh Heartthrob back in the day, not Hartnett.
And I'm like, where? Movie, this is a total tangent, but didn't Josh Hartnett make that movie where he decides to abstain from masturbating for all of Lent? And every minute of that movie gives you blue balls in every sense of the word if you're a guy, because every second of that movie is him seeing some piece of tit or ass that he cannot have, and you're sitting there as the audience like, I'm just going to masturbate. I'm tired of him waiting for this. I'm just going to do it myself, you know?
And then he gets graped at the end by that girl. Totally got graped.
More grape for this episode. We got a lot of grapes.
A lot of grape
episode.
Going on, yeah.
Harold Perrineau also was Manny in Constantine, the original TV show for Constantine that was amazing, and I wish that they hadn't canned it at NBC.
That sucks.
Is what it is.
I've not seen anything that Harold Perrineau has been in that I didn't like.
He's really good.
Or him as an actor, I should rephrase. He's probably been in some sketchy shit, but him as an actor, I've never been disappointed. I've never been like, he's a piece of shit, you know?
Robert Carlyle, Rumpelstiltskin, aka Don, is the guy with survivor's guilt who picks the wrong time to make up with his estranged wife.
Yeah, he did.
Talking about grape, isn't that a little grapey how he just went over and just started? It's like, well, you can't move. Let me just make out with you.
And my husband would totally do that to me and be the doom of some fucking situation. And not only that, that's not all he would do to me, so...
I think you can spread the rage virus through intercourse. I'm pretty sure that would work that way because there's at least a little bit of blood involved in that transaction.
I hope so, because if I'm going down, he's going down with me.
Really?
Ain't none of that I would want you to be happy without me. Nope, get in this casket.
No, run these streets with me until we starve to death.
Yeah, at least get me out of these straps, because dang.
Robert was in Trainspotting 1 and 2 with Ewan McGregor, who we have already said was, you know, Cillian Murphy's also, you know, or might have been this character in the original 28 Days Later.
Hold on one second, Reverend. Ewan McGregor was supposed to be Cillian Murphy's, was supposed to have Cillian Murphy's role in 28 Days.
Oh, really?
Yes. And possibly Ryan Gosling.
Gosling, yeah.
Why did Ewan McGregor pass on it?
Because he was pissed at Danny Boyle for getting passed over for a movie right before that. For Leonardo DiCaprio got the job instead of him, so he was pissed at Danny Boyle that he didn't cast him.
Yeah.
So. Bummer.
Yep.
Well, it's not like it hurt his career. I mean,
and it was
obviously not
clearly one of Killian's first roles, so we're kind of glad he got it because clearly he's done very well for himself.
Yeah, it's not like Oppenheimer wasn't amazing or anything. He was in The Full Monty, Don was, or Robert Carlyle. Once Upon a Time, as we've said, is Rumpelstiltskin. He was the voice for both Dracula and Gabriel Belmont in Castlevania Lords of Shadow and Mirror of Fate.
That's fucking awesome.
And he was in the movie Ravenous, which is a cannibal movie. Could be covered this season, but it's technically human horror, so I guess we'll save it.
Yeah, let's save it for human horror, because I'm over zombies, and we have so many more. We're going to have to do two seasons of zombies, that's for sure.
But, yeah, there's way more zombies than there is time to reveal.
Babe, do you remember when I was obsessed with Once Upon a Time?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I fucking hate that show.
Do you remember?
I hate Disney, and I just hate that show.
That's not a Disney show.
It might as well be.
It's based on the fairy tales, not necessarily.
And it was
Disney.
On ABC Family, which they ended up owning afterward. Anyways.
Afterwards,
it was a Disney show. Let's stop fucking beating around the bush.
But that being said, it's Disney gone dark. Do you remember when I used
that to? That was not a dark show.
It kind of got dark. You didn't watch it with me, so
I didn't have to. I know what dark shows are. That nothing about that strike dark to me.
It's not a show Disney would have put out if they had rights to it at the time.
You ever seen the movie Antichrist?
No, I'm not talking about horror films. Anyways.
It's not a horror film. It's a dark movie.
Okay, well, anyways, please let me finish. You're being rude. But
you're being
do
rude.
You remember when I was watching it?
Show off.
Do you remember Robert Carlyle as Rumpelstiltskin?
No.
At all? He was the only thing good in that show. He was, like, he's an amazing actor.
I'm trying to remember.
He was evil and good, if that makes sense. Like, he wasn't for anyone but himself.
He's always been a good actor. Yeah. I like almost everything
he's
in. So,
whatever he did was always to benefit himself, but sometimes it was to benefit the people in that town as well, so.
As long as it benefited him.
As long as it benefited him, and only if it benefited him, so.
Hey, that's how Loki works, too, in the MCU, and it works out pretty well for the most part. It's like, I'll work with you if it works out for me, so.
Exactly, I mean, and, like, you can't, like I said, you love to hate him, and you hate to love him, so he was good in that show.
We have Catherine McCormick playing Alice, the rage virus carrier, mother, and abandoned wife. Man, that's rough at the beginning of the movie.
I have feels for her. Like, I resonate because I would be so mad if I watched my husband leave me. Like, there wouldn't even be rage from the virus. I would just have rage.
Are you fucking serious? If that was a scenario and you had the option to get the hell out, get out.
Ditch.
Yeah, like, just understand what's going on.
But he didn't even try to help her.
I will put it this way. If I was trapped in a situation like that and I was a dumbass that tried to save this kid, and I know why she did it.
Oh, yeah. I forgot she tried to save the kid. Yeah, that's her fucking fault.
But if I was in that trapped situation because of that and I saw my wife at the window, I'd be like, go. Just go. You know, at least one of us
save yourself
would survive,
as you're being ravaged.
She was in Braveheart, Spy Game, and Shadow of the Vampire, which is a pretty fun little movie. I think it's got Willem Dafoe.
So who, don't say anything, Sean. Who is she in Braveheart, Raina?
I didn't watch Braveheart.
What?
I've never watched Braveheart. How are you surprised?
That's a hell of a good movie.
Who was she in Braveheart?
It was Mel Gibson's wife.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't see Braveheart. That's way too long of a movie.
Because it's a good movie. You're telling a real legit story from time.
There's a lot of factual things that they got wrong, but it's done in the interest of making the movie more enjoyable. So
I don't hold that against movies, you know?
Idris Elba, don't know who that is.
Never heard of him.
Plays Stone, the U.S. general who does what is necessary. And, I mean, I don't blame him for anything he does in this movie. It's cold. It's cold-blooded. But, I mean, look at what's happening. And then look, he makes the right call. He really does.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in MCU. He's in the Thor movies. He plays Heimdall, which is stupid because it's Norse mythology. Black Vikings were not a thing. Stop trying to make them a thing. You can say that there was black people who were amongst the Vikings, but I got news for you, folks. They were probably not considered amongst the top class. They might have been captured and forced to do things, you know, so whatever.
Do you think they were put at the front line so that they could be the first? Like, if you're good enough, like, you can protect us?
For Vikings? Probably yeah, not.
If they captured any black people, they probably did that. Yes.
Vikings were all about war. So I can't imagine them have anybody have cutsies in front of them.
Not cutsies, but like, yeah, you guys go check out this small
tribe.
You're
talking about a group of people that would take mushrooms and go on a berserker rampage in the middle of a war.
Berserker rampage.
That's what the whole idea was.
They did do that. I don't know. The whole idea, they recently did on Assassin's Creed Valhalla or whatever it was. There's a whole thing where they've got like this, one of your captains of your boats is black. And I'm just like, come on now. This forced diversity shit is getting old. Make a game about Africa. If you're wanting to make it like, you know, if you're wanting to make it historic, don't try to change history, but whatever.
Make a movie called Black Panther.
The Losers, he was in that. That was a pretty fun action movie. Fast and Furious, Hobbs and Shaw. Ugh. He plays the bad guy in that movie.
So over Fast and Furious. There's so fucking many of them.
Yeah, they burnt that series out. And the last one was supposed to be god-awful. I still haven't watched it yet.
Isn't there supposed to be another one?
Yeah, they're still making another one. It's not done. He was in the Suicide Squad, but the new one, not the old one.
Okay.
So the one that James Gunn did. It's actually pretty fun. I like it. He was actually Knuckles in Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Nice.
You know. He was known for playing Luther in the TV series and it's supposed to be pretty good. I've not seen it. He was in The Wire with Omar Epps and some other people. He was in The Office for 9 episodes.
Jesus, I don't remember him.
He was in the awful Dark Tower movie. And when they cast him as Roland, I mean, all the people that came out there, if you think he's a bad choice, you're a racist. I think it's a bad choice because in my mind, and even in the books, they describe Roland, at least up until King had the accident, they described him as looking like Clint Eastwood. Do you think that Idris Elba in any way, shape, or reality looks like Clint Eastwood? I don't. Just saying.
I'm colorblind, so yes, he does.
I don't see color.
Yeah, his facial features alone looks like him. Yeah, it's perfect. Later, though, King fucks the whole thing up and says that whenever Roland meets King right at the accident when he gets hit by the van, that the people looking around see King's face in Roland's. And that totally ruined the story because, listen, Stephen King's an ugly motherfucker. You can say what you want to about his writing prowess and everything else. He is not this dashing cowboy.
No.
So I know what he was getting at, that Roland is a part of him, so there's natural a little bit, but not physically. I mean, maybe like how he acts is like King, but to say that he looks like can you imagine a cowboy with Stephen King's goofy-ass face?
No.
I'm just throwing that out there. And poor Joe Hill looks just like his dad. So he's,
oh God,
I mean, he looks like he was spitting image.
Yeah.
He was also in Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance with our Lord and Savior Nick Cage, Prom Night Remake in 2008, and The Reaping. So he's got some horror bona fides there, even if he was in The Dark Tower and that movie was awful. Synopsis. 28 weeks after the Rage virus tore through Britain, the Rage zombies have all died due to starvation. The U.S. military, through a pact made with NATO, have moved in to relocate and restart the country with former citizens. Unfortunately, they find a survivor that it became a carrier during the height of the infection, and she ends up restarting the whole mess. Hawkeye is trying to save some kids, Alice causes everyone to flip their lids, and Andy might be the hope for a cure. When days turn to weeks, ... That's not terrible for another tagline, but it's not great either.
Well, considering our tagline that was used was, oh, God, I'm trying to find it.
It Begins Again or
whatever
it was. Yeah,
It Begins Again. Yeah. I'd rather have, what do you call it, When Days Turn to Weeks.
Here's some other taglines. Warning, ! Maintain the quarantine deadly force will be used to protect this area.
Too long didn't read.
It's back.
Too short. Just,
that's it. It's back. It's not over.
No.
Are you safe? ?
No.
I feel like that should be over top of like a milk carton or something. Are you safe? Are your children at home tonight? These are all kind of variations of the same thing. Quarantine, eradication, sterilization, repopulation.
That one's a no because the repopulation part, it reminds me of the first movie and the grape.
Yes.
So
the
maybe not.
Eradication, sterilization, repopulation, reinfection.
See, that one's a little bit.
Which is actually how the movie goes.
Yeah, that makes a little bit more sense. And even though repopulation is in there, it doesn't feel so, I don't know, for some reason that one doesn't come off to me as, because population was the last part of the first one. So it was like, oh shit, yeah. Okay, now we got to grape everyone and make sure that we get these, you know.
There's a lot of these. The threat is everywhere. That's one of them. Mm-mm. Okay. There is no escape.
No.
We've lost control. Kill them all. I actually kind of like that one.
That one's funny. It's a no for me, but it's better than the others.
Week one, no trace. Week two, no warning. Week eight, no control. Week 16, no cure. Week 28, no escape.
God, that one's long, but we've heard some way worse ones.
Yeah. Here's another variation. Quarantine, eradication, sterilization, repopulation, reinfection. They just combined the two of them.
No, thank you.
When days turn to weeks, the horror returns. I feel like when days turns to weeks is by itself is fine. You don't need the rest of that.
I actually like that tagline.
When week 28, no escape. Okay.
Yeah.
This one's a simpler version. Eradication, repopulation, reinfection. And then this one, which is a slap to Frank, virus spreads through the eyes.
No.
It does. It does. Frank will tell you.
If he could talk. Or
at least he would if he could talk.
Yeah.
quotes. Alice, who was chasing you? The boy in the cottage. My mom, my dad, they're trying to kill me. There's others too. And then Donald's like, how many? And then the boy in the cottage, loads. And then you're like, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then they bust through the door. I'm just like, God, this kid.
Well, technically, they didn't bust through the door. That stupid girl started pulling all that shit away.
Yeah, I was looking for a boyfriend.
That's true, but once they saw it, I mean, once they started really, like, leaning into it, like, they barely had that place boarded up. I mean, or at least the boards looked like they were made out of, like, rotted wood or something, which they probably were.
If she didn't start pulling that stuff away, who's to say what would have happened?
I mean, it's like we discussed in the hospital. How did he survive? Well, he was being so still, snoring aside. I know we're trying to talk about all different scenarios, but he was so quiet and so still, they just had other things to worry about. Well, now there's nothing around them. So they're looking or listening for anything at this point. And that little tearaway, they probably saw and heard.
Here's a little bit of, something to think about to ruin the movie for you that I just thought about. When in what world does a kid outrun an adult who just, I mean, is like these rage zombies? Their legs are shorter. They tire out easily. I mean, I know they can outrun me as an adult, like right now, because you get old, but I mean, these are fucking Olympiad runners.
Yes.
I mean, let's just face it. That kid did not outrun it. Whenever he ran there, he would have been eaten way before been attacked way before he ever got to that cottage. Just saying.
No, but you said he was infected.
He would have been. They would have got him.
No.
There's a whole joke on speaking of Ewan McGregor in the Disney. What's his fucking name? They
Obi-Wan?
Just did the show Obi-Wan. There's a whole joke about the fact that there's a scene where Princess Leia, young Princess Leia, she's only like 9 or 10, is outrunning these bounty hunters. Like, and they're full on adults. They're at a full clip running at her. And even the kid admits that it's goofy. I mean, she's gone on record to say that there's no way she could outrun them. That in the scenes, they actually had to stop. And then, like, you know, so have them guys stop so that it looked so she could, you know, gain some momentum.
Well,
that's
in real life, but Leia's force sensitive.
Regardless of that, she doesn't know she's force sensitive, and she only ever uses that power to mysteriously float in outer space and not die.
But wouldn't you say they could use that to technically explain it away?
No,
I feel like they could.
Because the force doesn't give you the ability of the game anything. It gives you the information of potentials and stuff like that.
There are
gives you the power
in
to force
universe,
jump.
Okay, look how many Jedi get killed all the time. Look at Order 66. Okay.
There are powers in the universe that allow you to move at faster speeds. There are. It's established in the games, at least, if they're still canon. I don't know. I've fucked off with that because, I mean, Disney Star Wars is awful. But yeah. Her by herself, she is not outrunning a grown adult. And this fucking kid did not outrun these zombies because none of us could outrun these zombies. And we're adults with longer legs. Maybe not Urena, but.
Hey, wow, with the attacks.
You're still taller than that fucking kid was. Let's just be honest about it. Maybe. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I think that the kid, it's a logical fallacy that kid could outrun those adults.
Yeah, I don't think he is. There's no way. And not only that, because if that were it, look at these kids that be getting kidnapped. They be running. They still be getting caught.
And the only reason Andy doesn't get caught in this movie is because he hides in the fucking air vents, you know, down in the, you know, in the lower section whenever they, in the rave room or whatever. That room looks like the room that Blade's first scene was filmed in, you know.
I was waiting for
the sprinklers to start pouring blood down.
You just hear the jellyfish ray from SpongeBob kick into gear. Blood starts raining.
Flynn speaking to Doyle. Doyle, you bastard. And Doyle's like, boy, I've never seen you get so white. And it's funny because, you know, Flynn's black. And then Flynn's like, come on. And then Doyle's like, dude, good morning. And then he's like, get the fuck out of here, man. I'm having all good dreams. And Doyle's like, yeah. And he's like, Sunday afternoon, clear blue skies. I'm laying in bed with my wife. And now I'm back in this shithole. And Doyle's like, I know, man. I've had the same dream about your wife. It's a good interaction between Jeremy Renner and Flynn to kind of establish their relationship. And did you, I've not watched this movie enough, but Jeremy Renner got me with one of those fake scares that he did on Doyle in that scene. He did. Like the first time I'm like, okay, whatever. But the second time when he came back was in his face out of nowhere doing the rah or whatever. Like it got me. I'm like, you motherfucker,
they also enhance the volume. So.
I know, but it was like, it worked. I felt bad because I'm like, I don't know. These jump scares, getting me with that one's pretty shitty, but it worked. Andy, you know, speaking to Tammy, I saw Dad, and then she's like, Dad, where? And he's like, and then he says, Tam, he's one of them. That's right after, you know, he sees him run in there, which is another thing. That's another door that, that Don had to get through to get in there to where all those people are at. But they set it up at the beginning of the movie. Remember, they do have the line, I've got the key card that opens up everything in this place.
Yes.
They say that at the beginning, and then it's the Chekhov's gun of it all, because once he becomes infected, somehow he's still smart enough to use the key card. I don't know how, but he does.
Because he was fresh, just like that kid. Well, I shouldn't say the kid at the hamburger stand, but when they're fresh, you can kind of still have a tiny, tiny, very micro bit of your senses left. But I don't think you have enough senses to use a key card. Like, I don't know that I'm buying that.
You're stretching with that.
That's why I am. That's why I'm saying it's the chances are very slim.
That's pushing it. That's really pushing it with a key card. That's why I say this movie fails under scrutiny versus the first movie's like I gave it a 5. I mean, I just gave up because it's nitpicking. But it's a tightly written script and all that. This one's got a lot of holes in it. It really does.
Not only that, but if you could use the key card, let's say you could. Let's say it accidentally bumped against the, you know, the pad, and okay, cool, now it's working. You still have to open the motherfucking door.
Yeah, or it has to be one of those doors that slides open on its own, and not every door in this compound does that.
Yeah, there's no way. It wouldn't be safe for anything that's in behind those doors if it's really a lab. I don't even know what this place is, to be honest with you.
The setup is that it's like a very small, like, quarantine section off. I think they even said it was the Isle of Dogs or whatever it was. Right outside the main, like, you know, because they didn't want the people in, like, a large enough area to where if some random, you know, like rage, you know, zombie or maybe even a chimpanzee or something could accidentally infect them. They wanted them in an area they knew was completely cleared out.
Yes. And locked in and then
locked in and that sort of thing. So that, and then they were going to steadily expand into the city and like open up more of the area once they knew it was secure, but things didn't go that way.
So I got a question of the many times I've watched this movie, and maybe both of you can answer this question, but where were the kids? Because obviously they were not with their dad. How were they safe and protected from this? Does it
they
explain?
They got off the island.
They were quarantined in, I want to say, Spain or something, I think
okay,
what they said.
So they were able to get off the island in time and, okay. Wow. Yeah.
Which makes you feel even worse for Jim and Selena and the crew in the first movie because they, I mean, I know Jim couldn't have, but like Selena, that means that, that they didn't, I mean, she must have missed the, you know, the getting evacuated out of there or something.
Yeah.
For her to be trapped there. And then Scarlett, this is the setup for all of those variations of the, you know, what I just said for taglines. Scarlett makes the line, it's all makes sense. They're executing code red. Step one, kill the infected. Step two, containment. If containment fails, then step three, extermination.
Yeah.
And then Stone, abandon selective targeting, shoot everything. Targets are now free. We've lost control. Which is a pretty good scene for Jeremy Renner because he really well sells that you know, being conflicted. He's like, yes. I don't want to shoot this, you know, these regular people, you know, but
yeah.
It was so chaotic. I don't know how they were telling which ones were infected and not. I mean,
there's no way to. Everyone's got to run frantically and like, you're scared.
Well, that's why he opened up all targets.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he had to. And then the firebombing. I don't hold anything against Stone in this movie. It's shitty for the survivors, but they lost the situation. They had to keep it from spreading, you know, to, you know, and getting off the island, which it ends up happening anyways because the goddamn kids.
Yeah.
You know, he did what he had to do. I mean, this movie's clearly better in the visual department just because they did, you know, film it on, you know, actual film cameras, I mean, versus the first one being on little mini DV recorders.
It's so funny.
That scene at the beginning is so well done, though. That scene where Dawn is, like, trying to get... I mean, that's, like, every nightmare I've ever had about a zombie outbreak is that beginning with Dawn.
Yes.
Every room you run into, they're right behind you. It's like, oh, well, I'm going to go out the window. As soon as you get out the window, they're out the front door chasing you. So then you're running across the field away from them. Oh, there's a boat. And then you hop in the boat, and then they're jumping in the water beside of you. I mean...
Barely escaping if you're escaping, you know?
And then, I don't know. I mean, it's, and then of course that music, the classic music we talked about is playing.
Cause is that scene anything without that music?
Well, the music, it's intense. It's that progression, tempo, upbeat kind of like of peril.
Oh, we know. It's so good that they're using it in other films and in commercials. Yeah.
Louis Vuitton.
Yeah. Louis Vuitton.
How does that fit Louis Vuitton? I have no idea.
Dove soap.
Yeah. That's what I told Reverend. I was like, oh, well, you know, we're going to see this on like a fucking Oil of Olay and it's going to be like, oh fuck, Raccoon City.
Listen, if you're playing that in Oil of Olay, then that your product causes zombie outbreaks. I'm
exactly.
sorry.
Exactly.
It just does by association. And the scene when everything starts to break down is really well done in this movie. Like the chaos in it, Jeremy Renner looks over, that one guy yells for him. It's like, Doyle, help me, there's two here. And by the time he looks over with his sniper rifle, the guy's already been having his throat tore open or whatever. Like all, and the scene that always gets me in this movie, because I keep forgetting about it, is when he gets out of the car and he lies to Rose and he says, I'll be there. Just go to the stadium, knowing full well that they're going to fucking kill him.
Yeah.
And as he's pushing the car, just gets toasted with that flamethrower. I mean, like, you know, that's pretty well done, but there's a lot of like middle part of this movie when they're repopulating that gets a little dull, I think, at the beginning before the ship breaks loose again.
I don't know. I think it gives the movie context. It shows that we're doing it. We're winning. We're really turning this around. And the reality is this is about to collapse.
Yeah, it's needed. Don't get me wrong. It's just there's points where I'm just like, if it wasn't for them introducing the fake scares with Jeremy Renner's like Doyle like scaring his buddy, like there would be nothing in that really to keep the tension up. You know, it's like because you're waiting for the shoe drop, but until Alice is introduced, there's really no threat in the movie. I mean, because she's the threat. You know.
Yeah. Trying to think. I mean. It's also, they're just what, like a barricade or two away from the city where there is a threat still, which is technically Alice, right?
Well, in theory, everybody and all the infected in the city are dead from like, you know, because It's way past the point that they've all starved to death. Like, okay, way past.
But are the bodies still technically around? They haven't cleared out everything.
They are. So the blood on the bodies could get them infected if they get exposed to it. Yeah. Yes.
There you go. So that was the threat. That movie. There's the threat. And there's also the fucking kids. Like, how do those kids get through? And they're just like, oh, some kids made it into the city. No big deal. Nobody on it. Nobody making loud announcements. No one screaming at them. Nothing.
They even know about it because Doyle or somebody says, we got a couple of dogs. Yes. Or it's like, and then he's like, no, we got puppies loose, you know.
Exactly. And
saying that they were kids.
What the fuck? Like, what is going on right now? Like, you know, people aren't supposed to be over there.
It's hilarious, though, in the movie, and you know it's going to happen, but, I mean, it's just hilarious in a dark way that Rose, they interpose the scenes between Dawn and Alice with Rose and Stone, and he's like, why don't we just burn her and get rid of her? She's got the virus. And she's like, but she might hold the secret to a cure. And then you're sitting there, and you see him walk in, and you're like, and then it cuts back, and she's like, but her saliva is still highly infectious.
Yes.
And then you're like, God damn it. He's going to kiss her.
He's going to kiss her.
And, you know, then there you go. And it happens. Yep. You know?
It's the perfect revenge, though.
Here's my question, though.
He didn't do anything wrong.
Here's my question. Why was there nobody watching that place after they had admitted admittedly infected person in that room? Why was there not even a scientist? I mean, skipping ahead to World War Z, why was there not just some, you know, nearly bald scientist over there puttering around in the corner that was watching everything?
Yeah.
They just like, oh, she's infected. We'll just lock the room up. It should be fine. Should be fine.
Or how come there wasn't a camera on it and someone monitoring the camera?
There was a camera, and, yeah, and the person monitoring it didn't give two fucks that there was a guy in there with her. Like, mm-hmm. I mean...
Wait. So
I know it has to happen for the movie.
Yes.
But it's a very big lapse in logic.
Well, listen, even if he had gotten in there, okay, he got in there by accident, or did somebody, nobody took him there. He found her.
No, remember, he had the key to everything.
Yes.
And why would you give that to a civilian? Mm-mm. Why would you give that to a civilian? I don't care how much clearance he had in the buildings. He should have never had clearance to the military viral containment room or whatever. Like, that's, I mean, there is levels of clearance, and he should not have had that.
Yes. So what I'm thinking is, if they did have another person in there, like you said, kind of watching the situation, like, hey, what are you doing here? Or at least babysitting the situation, like, okay, this is your wife, but like, bruh, you can't touch her because she's highly contagious and blah, blah, blah. And then let's just say, this is just me giving out my fucking theory, he fucking sneaks in a kiss anyways, because we know that's what happens. Now, that scientist who knows shit's about to go down opens the door, and that's how he gets out.
That would have made more sense. Yes. As far as how he got out, and it would have excused the nonsense of him somehow having enough sense with the rage virus to do what he did. Still, it's one of those situations where it had been funny if you get to that point in the movie, and then the scientist is like, oh, by the way, she's highly contagious, don't get near her, and then just the credits roll. Because nobody ever got near her, and it's like, and the rage virus, Rose character. Yeah, that's the end of it. I mean.
Oh, so dumb.
It's funny whenever I was rewatching this, because I remember one scene, and I kept thinking that this was part of it, and it happened eventually. The scene where Dawn's in the underground subway, you know, and it's all dark, and like, he's attacking them, and they can't, mm-hmm, see anything other than that night vision scope.
Yes.
I kept remembering that scene, but I was thinking that Alice was like a half-crazed zombie, and that was my misremembering of the movie, because I don't think I'd rewatched it since I saw it in the theater. It would have been so much scarier if they would have had a movie where, like, the subway had more of the infected in it or something, you know, the unclean section of the
oh, yeah,
city or whatever had those in, you know, and it's like,
that's what I imagined. I
mean, yeah, but that's what's 28 weeks? 28 weeks is like 6 months.
Yeah, 6 months. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good chance for everything to kind of technically either clear out or starve out.
Yeah, I mean, I get it for why they were saying that, but it's Because you think, I mean, I'm just thinking from the point of view, like, this, it's so effective in Fallout 3 of all things. When you go into the DC subway and all you can hear in the distance is those ghouls, like, screaming. And you know that there's somewhere down here where the light's barely working. And you're wondering which corner one of those fuckers is going to jump out and start attacking you from. And they had the perfect setup for something similar in this movie. And they get it a little bit with Dawn, but it's a, he's like a known threat at that point. It's not like, you know, it's like, oh, it's that fucker again.
Yeah.
You know, it's Rumpelstiltskin. It's like, if they went down there and, like, if they went back in the zombie virus, you know, or the chronology of this movie, and they had a scene where some survivor was down there and they were trying to make their way, they think that the subways were like safe, and then all of a sudden the rage, you know, virus like zombies come out of it. I think that would have been more interesting, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Because they kind of had that in this movie anyways. They had Jeremy Renner and, like, you know, and Rose's character and the two kids, like, they were being chased by the ones that made it out of the containment area. I mean, they were being chased by them, because there's the whole – that is a cool scene where Doyle turns the – I don't know how feasible it is. Flynn turns that helicopter, like, at an angle and chops them all up with a blade.
That's yeah.
Just, even if it is – I don't know how – workable that really would be in real life.
But. Yeah.
Yeah. You think one body would have damaged the blade?
Damaged the blades, or somehow threw or hit the blade in a way that would have knocked it, you know, made it wobble a little bit and would have thrown his trajectory off to where he would, because it doesn't take but just one little mismaneuver for him to go nose diving into the ground at that point.
Yeah.
Seeing that one guy get his comeuppance was kind of cool in that scene, though. The little also ran survivor that was with him, that was willing to sacrifice the kids just so he could survive. Yeah. It's like you were waiting for him to get his moral, you know, like to do. And like when in that scene where he's like, I'm just going to grab onto the helicopter, and then he gets bit anyways. And then Flynn has to deal with him, you know, at that point,
yeah,
throwing him off. But yeah, I don't, there's some logistical things this movie that, like, when I think about them, I mean, I know I shouldn't, but the first movie you can think it through and it makes sense. This yes. movie's a little bit like, why was there nobody in there? How was the zombie able to get everywhere with a key card? I mean, how was Andy able to keep up with the rest of them when they were running? I mean, we're going back to the kid thing again, but somebody should have been holding him or something. I mean, for his size,
he's got
for him
the rage
to keep up
virus.
With the rest of them.
He does. He's got the rage virus.
Well, he does later, but yeah. But he's not got it in a way that actually gives him physical endurance.
You
he's got it to
know.
Where
it's in there.
Somebody drinks after him, and he's fucking, and now they're, which is my headcanon for what happens at the end of the movie. I think him and his sister shared, like, a Coke, and then they started, and then she raged out, attacked the helicopter pilot. They nosedived into France, and then the infection spread.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they survived. Was it a helicopter? They show a wreck at the end, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm surprised that they survived.
It doesn't show that they did. I mean, but somebody got out of there and
yes.
then started rage virusing all over the
that
place.
That is true,
so.
Yeah. Well, no one was in the helicopter unless the pilot was there.
No, there was nobody
yeah.
in it. You were basically hearing over the speaker in the helicopter at the end, which was well done. I'll give
yeah.
them that. And
they shared a bottle of water and shit went sideways.
Yeah.
That's all it took.
Quite possibly. I mean, but yeah, I don't know. Like I said, that's the only thing I could explain that it's not a good explanation. The problem with this film, which is what the benefit was in the first film, we talked about the simplicity of the first film. Keep it simple, stupid. They didn't
yep.
go ass wild with the details. They kept it real straightforward. This is how we survive. We need to go raid a grocery store. Perfect. They had a good time doing that. We need to get to this area. They got there. They got to see some basic, simple scenery. There wasn't a ton of fucking zombies around because they're either weeded out, dead, gone somewhere else, chasing fucking sheep in the field. I don't know what they're doing. But, you know, it gives them the free range to get to what they need to do. They get to where they go. They encounter some problems. The problem fixes itself because now they're rescued, quotation mark. And then it just proceeds. But everything, even though it gets wild and the story gets a little deeper, they still kept it straight and streamlined and simple.
Yeah, this one, I mean, just because of the nature of the story they were trying to tell, you have to, you get a little bit of fun by showing the infection, which to me is the most interesting point of the movie is that beginning. It really is. And if they would have showed more of like the survival stuff during the, the time before, that would have probably been a better movie in my opinion, but leave it as it may. But you got to set that up. I wanted to show that the, you know, then they had a little bit of exposition about how on the screen about how they contained it and then set up that they're, you know, trying to repopulate and then the calm of the, before the storm and then reintroduce the zombies again. And it's like you're a little bit fatigued by the end of the movie. It's like you teased me, gave me blue balls, and then you come back and you try to finish me off. And it's like, what are you doing to me here, you know?
Yeah.
I think if they would have went a different route and then just did a prequel or showed like, or maybe had a movie where Alice or just showed like Alice somehow getting out of the country somehow, like, you know, that she was found and they're like, oh, she's, you know, she seems to be fine and she's one of the survivors. And then she's taken to a place and then she spreads it to like France or something.
Yeah.
That might've made a better movie. I don't know. I'm just saying that like the, it's a, the full motion stop in your tracks and then full motion again, it gives you a little bit of a, you know, a whiplash feeling or whatever in this movie that I think kind of hurts it a little bit. Acting wise, the kid sucks.
Yes.
Tammy's all right, but she don't have a lot to operate off of. It's really, it's honestly Dawn and Jeremy Renner and Rose Byrne, they are the people that makes this. And then, you know, Perrineau, I mean, it's Flynn.
Yes.
But they're the ones that makes this movie. Like, and then Idris Elba for what he has to do, but he's only in it for, like, just, I mean, maybe 5 minutes total if he's even in it that long.
Well, I agree. They have great actors, except for, what, the kid. And I think because they had, either they were a great actor or they were visually appealing. Okay, we're just going to throw that out there. And so
now, Rose Byrne's pretty woman. I mean, even if she is dressed down in the...
Yeah, no, understandably. And so I don't think the acting had to be kind of what it was from the first film, to be honest with you. And I'm not saying that these are not good actors. They are, you know, but I really don't think they gave their full self in this film.
No, they didn't have to because, I mean, it's like Doyle is like, I mean, he's really, I mean, I say Hawkeye whenever I was saying the synopsis, but is he any different than Hawkeye, really? I mean, it's he's a do-gooder who's really good at shooting stuff. I mean, it's not a stretch for Jeremy Renner to play that character. I mean.
No, not at all.
And then Rose Byrne, like, I mean, she's been more, she's way better in the Insidious movies. She really sells that motherly concern. She's really funny in all the comedy she does. You get a very subdued version of her in this movie.
Exactly. Yeah. And she's kind of, I know that they're trying to be a little more relaxed a little bit. Cause it's like, okay, well, we've got this under control. And so, you know, there's some protocols we've got to follow, but other than that, have a great time. You know, we're here to rebuild the world.
And like, I don't know, it's serviceable. It's not anything terrible. I mean, even Andy is not so bad it's like, oh god, that kid, because there are movies where I've seen kid actors and when they're on screen a lot of people always make fun of the kid in The Babadook, and I can't really argue against that because he's screaming the entire fucking movie like he's got autism.
Yeah. You didn't like that movie?
No, I love the movie. I'm just saying that the kid, if you want to argue that kid should make your ovaries dry up and your balls recede into your body and make you never want to, you know, procreate, watch The Babadook and you'll be like, I never want, I mean, it's the same, when we was talking about Vivarium, I mean, with Imogene Poots, it's like, that's the same scenario. It's like, do you really want a kid that acts like this? I mean, so there are worse kids out there and he's just fine. I mean, he's, but like, I mean, he doesn't, in the scenes where he should be really saddened by the fact that he's lost his father, or his father's a monster, actually, and his mother, when he's reunited with his mother in that scene, I don't get that sense of elation, like, oh my god, my mom's alive. I mean, and it's not the kid's fault. It's harder for a kid to get in that frame of mind. I mean, unless they're Haley Joel Osment or somebody who's, like, ridiculously good for their age. I mean, you get it as an adult, you're like, oh my god, I'd give anything to see my mom again, you know, especially, you know, the older you get. But like as a kid, it's like you don't think of those things because it's like, unless you've lost your parent, which, and then you feel real bad for the kid in that situation because, you know, that's a hell of a thing to go through.
But, yeah.
I don't feel like he sold those moments with his parents in particular. I mean, he should have, but I mean, it's on the director more than it is the kid. The kids can only, I mean, he is what he is. So the director could have, but then again, how do you want to be that asshole that's like sitting there? It's like, cut, go again. This fucking kid sucks. Cry for God's sake. You know, you don't want to be that guy. I mean, unless you're William Friedkin, and then you're fucking firing guns in front of a little kid and then having her break her back while she's masturbating with a, you know, a cross and or making it look like she is, at least. I don't know how he got away with that. I'm just throwing that out there. I feel so bad for Linda Blair. But, I mean, what are your all thoughts on the acting? I mean, I agree with Urena. I feel like even the actors we got in this, they're big name. They're doing their parts, but they're not like the first maybe where they're really selling the part. Mm-mm. You know?
Yeah, it's like they feel like they...
I disagree.
You think they are selling the part?
Yeah, I thought the movie... This franchise is probably one of my favorite renditions of a zombie movie.
No, there's no argument against that. It is one of the top ones. They are good films, but in comparison to what the actors had to make happen in the first to this one, I mean, this is a sequel.
Yeah.
They had amazing actors. The first film, they specifically wanted no names. They're like, no, we wanted this movie to kind of sell itself, and luckily it did. This movie did not do as good. It didn't do horrible, though, so we're not saying this is a bad film. But what we're saying is the actors, like, what do you think about them? Like, did they do everything they could? You think they gave their best performance they could for this type of film?
I think they did, minus the kid.
Yeah, the kid is a kid.
But outside of that, I feel like all the actors pulled their weight.
They're not terrible. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like, I mean, I don't think there's anything that Jeremy Renner did in this movie that beats anything Cillian Murphy did in the first movie at all. Like, I mean, he did the role. He's an American, you know, good guy. And I mean, and he's very charismatic. He, when he dies in the movie, like I said, you feel it because he's established a good character. It's just the issue of like, I've seen, like, it's not, compare his performance in The Hurt Locker versus this one. He gets way more out of it, you know, that character in The Hurt Locker than he does in this. It's a different character, I know, but still, it's like you see more of his acting chops in that movie.
So here's where I stand with the actors. When I think of Rose Byrne, I'm probably going to think immediately of, you know, Bridesmaids or Get Him to the Greek or something like that, something funny that she's been in. And they'll be like, okay, but if you think of Rose Byrne in a horror film, it's not going to be this film. This is not
Insidious.
It's Insidious.
It's 100% Insidious.
That's where she gives her best performance. And it's not that she didn't try. I mean, Insidious came out how much longer after this one? Like, was that a 2010 film or do we know?
I've not looked at it in forever to see when it actually came out. I'm going to pull it up right now. I'll say this. The two best actors in the movie is Carlisle, who played Dawn, and then the lady who played Alice, McCormick.
Yeah.
There are scenes at the beginning of it, and in that scene where she sees him and just that tear rolls down her face and that look in her eyes, that's the best acting in the movie. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, and then he's got a look on his face, too, when he sees her. You can tell the survivor guilt's in him and that all the baggage that comes from that. He does sell that. That's really good.
Yeah, and it sucks because Robert Carlisle, he's an amazing actor. He just is. Jeremy Renner, I didn't even remember he was in this film.
What?
He doesn't stand out to me in this film. I'm not saying I don't know who Jeremy Renner is.
He's the one thing I remember just because of his name. I'm like,
Remember just the fact he was the guy that pushed that car and got lit on fire. That was rough.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that wasn't great and everything, like, cool, but, like, it's not what I think. When I think of Jeremy Renner, this film isn't going to stand out to me. It's not going to be like, oh, yeah, he was in 28 Weeks Later. I don't know. I guess to me, Robert Carlisle obviously is always going to be the one that stands out to me. And the kids, shockingly, and they were not amazing. But that's bad. That's bad. If that's what stands out to me the most from this film, then, like I said, these actors, I don't think they gave it their all. Again, I'm glad they were in the film, and the movie to me is a good film. We'll rate it later, but yeah, it's just...
If you're comparing straight acting for Jeremy Renner in a very similar part, the scene he did, and I don't even think this is the best of the two movies, but mm-hmm. Endgame, Avengers Endgame, because I think Infinity War's better.
Yeah.
That scene where he loses Black Widow, and they have to, when they're fighting each other over who's going to die, and then he loses her. There's so much more emotion in his character in that movie than there. I mean, I know it's years on, and he's had time to perfect his craft, and yeah, all that stuff. But it's just, it shows the difference in the two roles.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, versus each other. Because he's at the point where, like, I mean, in this movie, I mean, who is he really that connected to in this movie that would give him more of a? I mean, because Flynn's his, like, only real, like, major connection. Like, he don't even, this virologist, he just meets her on the fly. These kids he's trying to protect. But his only real, like, you know, person he knows in the movie is Flynn.
Yeah.
You know, period.
I think, honestly, like, I'm not trying to shit on this film at all. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. But I think if anybody is going to discuss any of these actors, 28 Weeks Later is not going to be the film they think of immediately. Like, oh,
no,
yeah,
they're not their immediate movie.
But when you think of Cillian Murphy, you're like, oh, he was in 28 Days Later. That's where he started.
Even with the stuff that he's done recently, it's at the top of his movies that people still talk about.
It's not, like, his best film.
You remember him in this movie.
But you remember him from it. And that's the thing is, like, these actors, to me and only me and whoever else feels the same way, they were not that memorable. So
they did the part. They did. You want to call them day jobbers. They got in there. They played the character. It's a fun movie. I could rewatch this movie all the time. It's not a bad movie at all. It's just that when you watch it, it's just not like you remember, like you said, Cillian Murphy. Like, it stands out. Like, him, those scenes where he's running through London screaming, "Hello, is there anybody here?" You know, like, I mean, hell, The Walking Dead remembered it so well, they had to steal it. So, I mean,
shit.
Yeah, so, and not only that, but let's say we're going in trivia, and I'm jumping ahead, but I'm not reading trivia. But let's just say in trivia, like, they're like, oh, well, you know, we had, The Rock was interested in playing Jeremy Renner's role and blah, 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 or whatever. It's not that I like The Rock better. I don't think he's an amazing actor, but I'd be like, oh, yeah, I could see The Rock playing that role.
I could not.
When an actor does such an amazing job in a role, you can't see, and that was just an example, but you can't see anybody else filling those shoes. We could not see any other actor or actress filling the role of the previous ones. Rose, she's not who I would have guessed would play a virologist, but she's good in horror films. We've seen her in a horror film, you know?
You know who would have played the part of Jeremy, and I hate to make this comparison, the fact that one replaced the other in a series, and notably to a point that people didn't really remember it either. If Matt Damon played the part that Jeremy Renner played in this, he would have stood out. He really would have. I mean, I remember when The Bourne Legacy came out, I thought it was a good movie.
Yeah.
But everybody who watched it said Matt Damon did the character better. We miss him as a character. Jeremy Renner is a poor substitute in this situation, which I don't even think he was supposed to be playing any kind of, but it's like he was the substitute for, you know,
that's
Jason Bourne.
Sad, because I really do like Matt Damon as Jason Bourne, but I could totally see Jeremy Renner as Jason Bourne.
You know who would have been
an
awesome substitute for Jeremy Renner in 28 Weeks Later? Would have been Adrian Brody.
Yeah, I could see that.
He would have been really good, and he would have sold the
role.
The concern more about, like, the situation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that anymore. So yeah, that's the thing is, like, again, I'm not trying to say these actors are bad actors, and I'm not trying to say the film's bad or anything. I am just saying that it's not as memorable as 28 Weeks Later and 28 Days Later, and 28 Days Later honestly scares me more than this film.
Because you know when the shit starts in this movie that, I mean, well, the stakes are lower until they're not at the end of this movie, in the sense that, okay, if this virus breaks out again, and it does.
Spoiler alert.
It's the small group that they've brought back in.
Yeah.
That's who's going to die. That's it. It can't get off the island, you know, because the military is there, and those snipers are pretty damn effective, and they're doing their job. And then the air raids and it, or, you know, the air bombs and fire bombs and all that, and the gassing. That's another thing. You can kill these zombies with gas. I mean, that's way easier to kill than Romero zombies.
Yes. It's just a virus. They're not zombies. They're not undead.
Yeah.
Does it ever clarify that at all in the movie?
Yeah, it shows whenever they're running the gas in the streets, it shows some of the infected running and they drop dead from the gas.
And not only that, but in the first film, you didn't have to shoot them in the head. If you could damage their organs enough to where they die, they die. They die like humans.
Yeah.
Which means they can drown. They can, I mean.
I feel like you guys are being loose with that.
No, it's established in the movie. Anything that kills a person kills the rage zombies. The only thing is that they are super quick and they seem to have, because of adrenaline rushes or whatever, they're stronger than normal. Kind of like, you know, the stories you hear about pregnant women lifting cars off of their, or women who or mothers lifting cars off their kids that are trapped or whatever. They have that going for them, which is worse than Romero zombies, but you can literally kill them any way you can kill a human, which is a lot of ways, you know. I mean, and well,
I noticed it from the first film alone, but
it's also established in this. The gas that is shown killing several of the rage infect in this movie. The funny thing is that I noticed this is skipping ahead World War Z a little bit. Okay. This is tangent. If you fell off of a large building, even if you're undead, even if you're undead like they establish, wouldn't that destroy your body enough to where you shouldn't be able to run?
Technically. I think it
would. Yeah. Your body's broken. It doesn't matter if you're a zombie and you're unalive. If we've seen unalive or we've seen broken zombies with limbs cut off that they can still move, but guess what they can't do? They can't move very well.
And they're definitely not running like they do in a certain scene in World War Z where they fell like so many stories straight splatted to the ground or on top of a bus and then still get up and run like it's nobody's business. Whatever.
Okay.
But the rage zombies in this one would definitely break their legs and they wouldn't be running. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they're still humans.
So that's exactly what it says. So it says specifically, since rage-infected specimens are still living human beings, they can be killed using means that are fatal to uninfected as well as succumbing to starvation, unlike zombies.
Yeah, so that's the one. I mean, that's the one saving grace. And that's, like I said, the stakes are a little bit lower in this movie, I feel like, when you consider everything. Military's got it surrounded. They're responding. It's a very small group, even if it has, branched out of the Isle of Dogs and went in all they have to do is wait them out again. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Get the fuck out and wait for them to die.
And have lost control. However, obviously, I think the best part, which is, the fun and the scary part is that obviously they have taken it somewhere else in the helicopter unintentionally, still did.
That is the part that sells the mm-hmm. threat at the end of it. If it wasn't for that tagged on scene, you're like, okay, the stakes were a lot lower in this movie. But then when they take that kid out and they drunk a glass of water or whatever they did, and then they crash into France, you're like, okay, now it's fucking everywhere.
He was kissing his sister.
Really?
Hey. Imogene, she's pretty in this movie, so.
Imogene Poots.
Is that her name?
Imogene Gay Poots.
Is she British or is she American?
I don't. Here, let me pull up her information.
I want to say she's British, but I could be wrong about that.
Let me see. It's Imogene Gay Poots is an English actress.
Yeah. By the way, the music, just skipping ahead, the music is, again, amazing in this movie.
That
same bit of music is used, and it's still as effective.
Yeah, the music's great in this film.
That's my biggest issue with this movie. It's like there's a lot of things that they did to make the movie work that if they would have did something just a little bit different with the plot, it would have worked as well, and it wouldn't have had the inconsistencies. Like, the first movie was... That's brilliant. It's like you said earlier, Urena, the simplicity of it. It doesn't break its own logic because it doesn't twist itself in this loop to try to make the narrative work, you know?
There wasn't a lot for us to pick apart.
You guys are simple people, that's why.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It makes my eyes rain.
I hate you guys.
All right, you wanna move into trivia now?
Yeah, let's get into trivia.
When Danny Boyle, Alex Garland, and Andrew McDonald first began to consider a sequel, their initial idea was to do 29 Days Later, possibly using the characters of Jim, Selena, and Hannah from the first film. The idea was dropped in favor of doing a film set within the time frame of 28 Weeks Later, focusing on an SAS team sent into London to retrieve either their prime minister or the queen. finally, it was suggested to set the first film sometime after the events of the initial film and to deal with the impact the rage virus has had on society in general. I think I'd be down for a movie where they're going in there as like a spec op teams to try to secure somebody in the time frame before the infected are, you know, fully, you or know, like, starved or out like, or whatever. Yeah,
like 10 days in.
Yeah. That'd be a cool movie.
I think, yeah. Or not even that, you can almost do like a small TV series, miniseries like that.
Oh, yeah.
That.
Oh, you could for sure do that. That'd be amazing. Like, to, yeah, and then you keep could, it, you get more of it.
Well, not only that, but you can do a ton of it. Like, you could take like the idea of like a American Horror Story, but don't ruin
like an
it.
Anthology. Like yeah. each episode's like a different group of survivors or something,
or each season's a totally different, yeah. a different scenario.
That would be really good. Because here's the thing: is 28 days later. I'm glad they didn't do 29 days later with Killian and fucking what's her name Naomi. Because, yeah. look, it, they were great actors, but that was a great film. Don't fucking touch it. Don't fucking touch it. I know you did 28 Weeks Later, and I'm glad that that film exists, 28 Weeks Later. It's a good film. It's a nice, you know, scary zombie movie. Every zombie movie's going to scare me, but it's a good film that belongs in the series, but leave Jim and Selena and Hannah alone. They've already done what they needed to do. I think that if you had put them in a sequel, people would probably be excited. We'd go watch it, but I don't think it would do as well as the first one did.
Well, the what whole about this side? I think the biggest problem you run into when you do like TV shows or horrors and they go on for like multiple seasons, it gets stale.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think it'd be awesome if you just like this wipe the entire plot like cast every yeah. season. You just
what. What like about this idea? What if, to link it, what if they had like, I mean, this goes back to the prequel side of it. What if they had a scene where you were following a nurse in a hospital and she's there when they admit this bicyclist who just got hit by a truck or whatever, and he gets wheeled past, and then she, and it's about her and having to deal with the fact that she's trying to survive the rage virus. She was there when Jim was admitted, so there's the link, but it's about her. You
Can
know?
She at least cover up his wiener?
And it would even play in the Dawn of the Dead remake because that was a nurse and it started out and it showed her life. So it would be, you know, kind of a twist on that a little bit. Or,
yeah. You know. No, I think that would work. You still going to have Killian in it? I don't think that, like,
Well, you wouldn't even have to have – you could yeah. have, like, just a quick scene where it kind of looks like Killian yes. Murphy. Just like they're wheeling him past.
You're
you
like,
know?
Hey, I remember that dick.
Really?
That's a real thigh slapper right there.
It's for the ladies. The ladies needed some nudity.
Why was he ass naked? I don't understand.
He was in a gown. They don't put anything on you in a gown.
Yeah.
So that when he was in a coma, they were having to wipe his ass. That's the thing we forget about this. He was shitting That's on himself true. The yeah. entire time that he was laying there.
Erroneous. I didn't see any shit. When he got up, his asshole was clean.
Yeah. He has a yeah. flat butt. There was no cheeks covering that hole.
He would have had bed sores. He would have had, I mean, all kinds of problems. I mean,
yeah.
Why do you gotta ruin the movie?
And not only that, let's just not talk about the naked. Well, yeah, nakedness involved, but he was on like whatever that plastic or they use to protect it from urine and feces, of course, what they had on the bed. They didn't even have sheets on there, so his bed sores were going to be bad.
Oh, here's something they left out. Hmm. There should have been a scene, and this would have been bad for him. They could have done effects. There should have been a scene where he was yanking a catheter out because
Ooh,
he would
yes.
sure had one.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I didn't see that. I saw stuff taped to him, but you never quite see that happen. So, okay. We need to move on. We're going 28 weeks backwards. We need to stay 28 weeks current.
It is stated on the DVD extras that all the actors who are playing infected people come from a movement background, meaning they have a history in dance, gymnastics, circus, or mime. They also followed workshops to learn more about the infection and what they were supposed to do.
That's kind of cool. I'd want to take a rage workshop.
Here's the little twisty tick thing you have to do to really sell it that you're having convulsions or whatever.
Yeah, here's the noise you have to make. Here's, you know, the contacts you're going to wear.
The boy who arrives at the cottage, boo, at the beginning of the film, claims to be from Sanford. Sanford is the name of a fake village used by British police to train recruits and practice emergency preparedness drills, the street plan of which is based on that of Dundee, Scotland. Sanford is also the fictitious locale for the action movie Hot Fuzz.
Oh, my God.
This may be an in-joke reference to the fact that the team behind Hot Fuzz had previously made Shaun of the Dead, a film or zombie comedy that poked fun at 28 Days Later by dismissing rage-infected monkeys as the source of its own zombie plague. By mentioning Sanford, the makers of 28 Weeks and Days now seem to be basically, you know, returning the favor. It's like, we're going to poke fun at your movie too.
Yeah.
That'd be cool if that's the reason why. And I do remember that line at the big end of it where they're going on about the different ways. And when they said rage infected monkeys, when I first heard it the first time in the theater, I'm like, I know that reference. I know what you're talking about there. the farm that Don and Alice hide out in the start of the film is the same farm that appears in Children of Men, which is also an apocalyptic movie and in its own hell.
Interesting.
Basically, you can't have kids in this reality, and society is collapsing at an alarming rate because of it. Again, remember what we said about not being able to have children and, you know, and all that?
Yeah.
Well, just imagine if women were also in that boat and they couldn't have kids. I mean, I know that there's, you know, girl bosses that don't need no man out there, but I mean, motherhood is a thing that a lot of women, you know, choose to pursue and get a lot of, you know, personal enrichment from. And if it ain't available and you're all infertile, I mean, I'll just tell you, infertility is a hell that I don't wish on anybody.
Oh, yeah.
I really don't. So that's a good movie. Have you saw that one, Noah, Children of Men?
Yeah. It's all the women are infertile, I think is what it is.
Yeah. And there's, and then the one whore that they find, drug whore, yeah, by the way, at the beginning pregnant. Of the movie is the one that's pregnant. Yeah. Robert Carlyle had turned down the Christopher Eccleston part in 28 Days Later.
I wonder why.
That's an interesting tidbit.
I wonder if he was busy doing something.
He probably was. Yeah. How weird would it have been to have him in there instead? I mean, I think Christopher Eccleston sold the shit out of it, but Robert Carlyle could have easily played that part, I think.
Who was Christopher Eccleston again?
The major who told him that grape was on the table.
Remember? Oh, God. I mean, it would have worked. It would have worked. I could totally see him doing that, which is unfortunate, but I'm glad he didn't.
I do like him as Don better. I'll just put it that way. Danny Boyle couldn't direct the sequel because of his commitments to Sunshine. Cillian Murphy and Naomi Harris couldn't come back for the sequel either because of other commitments. Cillian Murphy and for Sunshine, you know, so it's kind of interesting.
Sunshine was the one with Bruce Willis.
No, Sunshine was, I mean, a similar concept. It wasn't, but it was like they were going to restart the sun or something like that, or going to try to do something like that.
Yeah, I thought Bruce Willis was in it, or maybe I'm wrong.
I didn't think he was. I think he might, in my mind, I think he might be commanding, of course, Armageddon or whatever it is, but, or whatever. I think he was in Armageddon, wasn't he?
Yeah, the whole idea of restarting the sun made me laugh. I was thinking, it's like, there's not enough helium and hydrogen. That's why the sun's imploding. It's like, how are you going to pump that volume of that element into there to make the, because even if you jumpstart it, there's not the atoms you need there to create
the
energy.
If you do that, you're still talking about all the just the gravity effects alone would probably be ridiculous to overcome, because when it starts imploding, it starts pulling, starts to become a black hole basically to a certain extent. So it's going to destroy anything that gets close to it.
Yeah, you're going to run into the event horizon where nothing can escape the gravitational pull of the implosion.
Robert Carlyle, between 2001 and 2003, he was in two movies. One of them was called The 51st State, and the other one was Once Upon a Time in the Midlands. I've never heard of that.
Once Upon a Time, funny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I'm guessing maybe that was the reason he wasn't able to. Oh, he was in another movie called Black and White in 2002. So he had quite a bit of movies going on. I just don't think time allowed him to be in the first.
What was that one? The documentary of Michael Jackson?
Yeah.
Black or white. Shamo. Millennium Stadium in Cardiff doubled for the interior of Wembley Stadium because at the time of filming, the interior of the newly built Wembley was still under construction. Visual effects were used to turn the seats red and make the grass appear untended.
That's kind of cool.
According to director Juan Carlos, composer John Murphy had only 2 weeks to compose the entire score of the movie. So if he reused the score, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
2 weeks?
Not 28 weeks?
I mean,
How long did they film for?
I don't know if I've got that information here, but I know that it was a lot longer than that.
Well, at least a month. That seems like reasonable.
Unless he's composing beforehand and they're doing the scene to the music, which it that happens. We've heard of that. But I'm thinking likely is they finish the film. They're like, here you go. You got 2 weeks before we got to fucking get this shit in production.
Or you don't get paid.
Yeah. And he's like, cool. I'm just going to replay.
And then he turned around and he's like, my music in that first movie was perfect. We're just going to reuse all that shit. And they're like, eh, it's your music.
And you know, he wasn't wrong.
No. I wonder if he got paid good for even though he rehashed all the music.
He's got to be because that song is still being used. It's still in play and so many other things that he's got to be getting some kind of fucking what?
They have to give him residuals. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, unless he completely sold the rights.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, that would be shitty if he did, but it happens.
It depends how much he got for it, too.
Yeah, that's true. It was Alex Garland's idea to use the timeline in the beginning of the film, which I get, but it's also a bit of exposition that kind of like, I mean, it's more show or it's more telling than show.
At that point.
You know what would have been really cool if they'd done like a montage, a time lapse montage showing like the breakdown, you know, in that 28 weeks or something.
Well, yeah.
Where you see like maybe you follow one of the rage zombies, one in particular, and you just see it wasting away or something.
That's why the whole idea of a miniseries would be awesome because you can take all these different perspectives in this do stuff.
You think that we would get attached to one zombie as we watch it wither away and die? Because no matter what, even if it is attacking other people, it's not eating. It's not taking any substance.
Got the perfect one. You follow the nurse that was tending to the dude in the first movie.
To dude's wiener. And like...
Yeah, you follow her to her decrepit inn.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that'd be good. The character of Doyle is a reference to the director of 28 Days Later, Danny Boyle. Obviously, it's a combination of his name.
I fucking knew it, too. That's what I was thinking.
And that is trivia. So there you go, folks.
We did it.
Really, really fun movie. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say 3.75, 3.8, somewhere in that range for me. I can't, there's too many things for when I watch it that just in the back of my mind that are nitpicks that for me to say it's not a five. I mean, I might have talked myself into a five for 28, but it deserves it for 28 days. But weeks is, it's a four at best,
What?
A four is still a really good score, babe. Give it a four. I'm giving it a four. Because I enjoy this film. I didn't enjoy it as much as I enjoyed.
I love watching it.
Yeah. I mean, 28 weeks later, or 28 days later, got a 3.7 from me. Excuse me, 4.7. So it almost got a 5. I don't know that I can give any zombie movie a 5. I don't know that I'm there yet. But if I were to give it a 5, it would be 28 days.
If there was more wieners in it, would you give it a 5?
No, that would definitely bring it down.
I don't believe
Women don't look at wieners like guys look at Veege and titties.
Erroneous.
That's where the 0.3 came down was the thigh slapper in the first one. So.
yeah. It was like, well, this was a 5 until I saw that 4. And, well.
Wow.
You gave it the size.
I gave
of
it
Killian
the size
Murphy
that it probably could have been. It had the potential to be this much. I won't ever know, and I don't ever want to know, but that's just what I would guess it would be.
You imagine your parents showing up to see the premiere
and your dick is just
your dick's just chilling.
I don't even want my parents to see my Veege, to be honest. Like, Dad, just don't go see that film, okay?
And then, well, but then you also have to have that awkward moment where your parent looks over and they said, you know, I've seen that all the time when you were a baby. It's not like I'm not seeing
that but
before.
Not with like Killian had
it's a little different to see it when it's all grown up.
I know, but that is a conversation that people have. It's like when you're walking through there and you're all embarrassed and like, you know, and your parents accidentally, you know, almost catch you like nude or something. And like, you know, in a context of a bathroom, there's like, well, it's nothing I've never seen before. And it's like, shut up, mom or dad or whatever. Yeah. It's like, that's gross.
I would never want to hear a dad hearing that to a daughter, but my mom still does that shit to me. And it's disgusting.
Think about that. That's a little creepy.
I would never say that to my son. Like, well, son, I saw that a lot when I was... No, I don't want to see it. Like,
I can just imagine,
I'm running
though,
and screaming down the hall.
I could just imagine Killian Murphy, and she probably wasn't that old, but like his little old, you know, sweet grand, you know, mother, who's like a grandma type now, sitting there drinking her tea, and then she's like, oh, there's your little pea bird, you know, and pea like bird. He's like, you know, he's like, mom, like, please stop.
That where they have a movie night and she invites all her friends because she's so proud of her son. And he didn't warn her that not only is his schlong on display, but he has to wear a merkin to show how much it's grown because he's been laying in bed the whole time because he's got some bush going on. He's got more bush than what's her name has in 50 Shades of Grey. What's her name?
He's got more bush than he has beard hair, and that's yes, a he sad does. Statement yes, for him.
It is. He is like grown out, and he probably used that as an excuse. He probably like, well, guys, like, you know, I had a lot of bush. Like, there's more behind that bush. There wasn't.
Hey, we're still talking about 28 days over 28 weeks.
And we that are
kind of proves our point. So, I mean, I'm just saying.
Oh no! Oh my God! No, I don't want to think.
All
about
right,
it.
Noah, what's your assessment of this movie?
I give it a 4.2.
That's good.
That's a good one.
Yeah. It's not a bad film.
It's not.
It's not even that, but it just re-engineered the whole genre. Like, that 28 series has just, it to me, it breathed a ton of life back into the whole genre.
Which is sad because this film financially didn't do as well. It did good. It did great, but it did not do near as well as 28 Days. And so we're trying to figure out where could it have gone wrong. It wasn't the actors.
A lot of it's the marketing. Yes. I don't feel like they ever marketed these movies good.
Well, 28 specifically didn't. They wanted it to market itself, 28 Days. Now, Weeks.
You know what other movie? I mean, obviously, World War Z, we've included it on here. It clearly influenced that. It clearly influenced Dawn of the Dead. It clearly influenced Zombieland, because they are Mad Cow, mm-hmm. going back to the whole thing that inspired Danny Boyle to do this, was Mad Cow was one of them. They are Mad Cow infected people, technically zombies in that, I mean undead, but they run, just like, I mean, because mm-hmm. the whole thing that, you know, Columbus says is cardio, because you got to outrun them. So, I mean, the running zombie, like you said, it did reinvent the whole genre when they put it in there.
Yeah. So
But I still agree with Romero, and I mean, and I hold the man. I mean, because he made them. I mean, he made zombies, so he has some say so in this. If it's an infected human and they can run, a-okay. If it's undead, they should be shambling at some point. Even mm-hmm. if it's not at first, they should slowly degrade into shambling zombies at some point.
Yeah, and this, if nobody else caught on, these are infected humans. They are not zombies, but.
They are in World War Z. They're undead, and yeah. It kind of shit that they're running like
good as dead, though, in this film. I mean, they're not, like you said, they're not coming back from it.
No, there's no cure. I mean, can you imagine, though, if they made in 28 years when they do make it, if they come up with a cure? Because somehow that kid survived and they found him or what it, or they found somebody else with apparently heterochromia, and that's what the carrier thing was. And they invent and cure, and like all the people that you watched that you personally, I mean, because this is something I always thought about in a zombie movie, the survivor's guilt. You killed your parents because they attack you or whatever. And then they come, and just like we was talking about with The Mist, it's like that ending where the military rolls up and they're like, okay, we've got the virus cure, we can pop it anybody. And you're like, I just fucking killed my parents, man. What are you talking about? You know, like that. There's a movie there, you know?
Yeah. Well, time to start over. New wife, new kids, new you.
Wow. It's a new year.
Oh, my God. This movie, I can't put on 28 Days Later and just sit down and watch it.
No, she was fucking panicking like a dog and yes. The fireworks going off.
I told her, I'm the same way. I've seen that movie down. So many more times than 28 weeks. And I told her, in 28 days, I still in that scene where they're out there in the ruins and they're sleeping out under the open sky. I'm nervous as fuck during that entire scene, even though I know they don't get attacked during that part of the movie.
I'm not a fan of that scene. I mean, I like the scene. I'm not a fan of the movie in terms of it's hard for me to watch. It's good. So I'm not just going to put it on, or it's not going to show up on TV, or the husband and the kids, they're going to be watching it one day, and I'm going to be like, I love that movie, and then I'm going to go into the kitchen and make some food, because I'm not going to watch it, versus 28 weeks later, for whatever reason, although it still scares me, I am not going to pretend that I am a Braveheart watching this film, I can watch it, it's something that can be on TV, and I'd be like, oh, okay. I think it's
the peaceful middle part, and it's the reduced stakes that allows you to enjoy it more, because if you get inside the movie, it's worldwide, at least you think so in the first movie, even though you know better once you've watched it, they present it that way. In the second one, you know it's isolated, you know it's just there, so it's a little bit easier to, it's like, oh, I'm in America, I don't have to worry about this.
Yeah, exactly. Safe behind this TV.
Yeah, I do think I agree to a certain extent. I could watch both of them if they're on at any point in time, but I think if part two was on, it'd be more like how it, I call them my Major League movies. If Major League is ever on TV, I don't care what part of the movie it's in. If it's halfway done, I want to watch it to the end to see Wild Thing throw that pitch at the end of it when he finally gets it right. It's the same thing with 28 Weeks Later. Whenever, if I see Jeremy Renner, you know, he is charismatic. I mean, if I see him up on the roof, you know, doing his sniper shooting thing, it's like, all right, I'm going to sit down and watch this.
Yeah.
You know? I'll have missed the beginning of the movie, though, which is a sad thing because that beginning is fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the best parts. But, I mean, there's a lot of good parts in this movie. A lot of funny parts that are not intended to be funny, but hey, you know.
But yeah, so anything else we want to say about this one before we wrap it up?
Babe?
No, it's an awesome movie. It should be in your top five zombie movies.
It should be in your pirate digital downloads because you can't get it on physical media.
Yeah,
right,
what
now.
The hell? You're not able to purchase this at all?
If you can, it's very far and few in between. I would recommend, again, try for some sloppy seconds is all I'm going to say.
Which it is might still be a pirated. Website.
It might be a website that sells bootleg, you know, movies, but I can attest. Let me tell you this. I got Berserk, the whole entire 1997 anime, and on, you know, from maybe this company, and
maybe.
It looks awesome. It looks amazing.
That
so
is hands down my favorite fucking anime of all time. There is that.
I watched the first episode.
Yeah, it's the best story arc ever. Have you watched the whole thing?
Not yet. I started the first episode. Also, if you really like Mike Flanagan, and if you follow this podcast, you know that we do. You might be able to buy at times every single thing he's ever done on Netflix, since they're not going to release them on physical media, apparently. You might be able to buy those too. Just saying, you know, if you want to own them. So
they did say they're coming out with 28 days and 28 weeks physical media again. They're promising it. We just don't have a timeline, and they're working on it, and they're trying to work out some kinks that happened. So.
Yeah, they continued that Berserk storyline. So like after you get done watching what you're watching, they re-release, I think it's up to 3 seasons of all the Kenro, goddamn, what's the guy's name? He's dead now, he died, but they released 3 additional ones after where yours ends.
Okay, so it's a continuation, and it's not that situation to do with anime where they reconjigger it to make like an OVA version, basically more like they remake
shrunk
the
it down
where it's more like the manga or whatever. It's not one of those situations.
Yeah, because they took the entire series and shrunk it down to 3 movies is what they did, but it sounds like you got the original. So the original is massive.
Yeah, it's the original series.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's massive.
Like,
so
I know you were talking about it, and I've had some people at work tell me, and I'm like, and I saw it, and it was like, I think that's the way you can get it on physical media is through, you know, secondary sites.
Yes,
and I was just
like,
okay, I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, and then so, but they ended up doing 3 seasons to continue the actual manga. It's awesome, after he died, they stopped it. But, dude, it is hands down, like, one of the best story arcs for a story ever.
Yeah, I'm currently looking at that same website right now because they finally put the Fall of the House of Usher on there on Blu-ray, and I want to go get that. Cause
yeah, that's actually
another
pretty good
one from Mike Flanagan.
Yeah, oh, I didn't realize he did that.
Yeah, it was...
The last thing he did for for Netflix before he moved to Amazon, now he's working in The Dark Tower, and I can't wait to see his version of that.
Yeah, The House of Usher, I was just like, this looks stupid. Then I sat down and watched like 2 episodes. I was like, this is hella good.
Yeah, they did a really good job of combining a lot of posts, different stories into one overall plot.
Yeah, I just but, I like the idea.
This podcast. I
go for it, man.
I feel like we've talked about this movie and we've discussed it. So join us next time for World War Z, which will definitely have some things to talk about because there is some major plot issues with that movie. Just throwing it out there. So anyways, with that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.